may not one day decide. But that doesn't change where we're at today. We do need to correct what's happened in the housing markets. But what happens, and how can we rebuild the dream of home ownership in this country? Let me turn my attention now to somebody that may just be able to help us. Joining us now is Nikitra Bailey. Nikitra is the vice president. She is the executive vice president of the Center for Responsible Lending, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that works to protect homeownership and family wealth by fighting predatory lending practice. Their focus is on consumer lending, primarily mortgages, payday loans, credit cards, bank overdrafts, and auto loans. Since they began their work in 2002, they have witnessed, studied, and fought against outrageous lending abuses, and God knows there have been plenty of that. Nikitra Bailey, welcome to First Shift this morning, and I hope you're well on this early Monday morning.
Thank you for having me. I am. I hope you are as well.
I am. I've got to tell you that this is going to be one of those discussions that I think is going to be profoundly important for people to hear. We look at the kind of work that you are doing, and we know that there has been really rampant discrimination, especially amongst people of color when it comes to lending. There was a time where we couldn't even have a discussion. Money became a little bit easier to get to, and so lots of people thought, well, I have been oppressed for years. I'm going to go get that mortgage, or I'm going to go get that credit card. I'm going to go get that credit that I so richly deserve, that everybody else in society has access to but me. And in the process, what we found out was those people were just looking to make a killing off of folks, and in fact, what they did do was suck them dry for every penny they could get, took everything away from them, and said, hey, you're on your own, or am I getting this wrong?
You're getting it right. For many people, homeownership provides an opportunity to build wealth and to place one's family firmly in the American middle class. Sadly, for African Americans and Latinos, instead of providing opportunity, homeownership has become a downward climb on the economic ladder out of the American middle class because of rampant predatory lending practices. Predatory lending is a practice that actually limits opportunity because it places families in an unfair economic disadvantage. This disadvantage happens because predatory lending targets end up receiving riskier loans with higher costs and fees than they qualify for. And it's really important here for me to let your audience understand that many of the African-American and Latino borrowers who received these predatory loans were not first-time homeowners. In fact, they had owned their homes and were living in them and had built up considerable equity. And that equity was under attack. What we saw was these communities were targeted by mortgage brokers to take the equity out of the home. And the reason why they did this, because there were incentives for the mortgage brokers, they would actually make more money on the loan to put these borrowers in more riskier products than they would otherwise qualify for.
Well, you know, at some level, the first question that comes to my mind, Nikitra, is, God, at some level, shouldn't that be illegal? But I know it wasn't, but man, shouldn't it have been?
Since 2006, my organization has released a series of reports where we have tried to highlight that what was going on in the mortgage market was a dual market. You had a market where white borrowers who had high credit scores, where one would define them as prime, were getting safe loans, traditional 30-year fixed mortgages, and those mortgages were giving them an opportunity to build wealth for their families. What African-American and Latino families were overwhelmingly bombarded with instead of safe prime loans were abusive subprime loans, and these were loans that had risky characteristics that made foreclosure more likely for these borrowers. And as a result of that, the American economy tanked because housing is such an integral part of our economy. So when we left one segment of borrowers out in the field with these risky practices, they eventually became mainstream and end up hurting our overall economy.
Well, you know, and then of course now we and I would suggest that in most still in most U.S. markets the real estate the real estate difficulties continue. Certainly, it's one of the indicators of a strengthening economy. And although Nikita, we do see that there has been some improvement. If we, again, we have got to go just a little under the surface, but if we do, we find that it's only a little better for white families. It certainly isn't better for minorities.
Absolutely. What we know at the end of this housing crisis, African American and Latino families are likely to lose between 11% and 17% of their homes. And this is for all people who own homes. This is a significant amount of loss for these communities because many families, like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, were historically denied access to credit. And because they were denied access to credit, they have spent the last 30-plus years trying to play catch-up and to use home ownership as an opportunity to build wealth for their families. But instead of positioning themselves for a more secure future, what they have resulted with is a net loss of home ownership. And that net loss of home ownership is going to be devastating for these communities for many generations.
All right. Well, you know, so we take a look at, let's go back to the point of what you do at the Center for Responsible Lending. This, you're not just collecting data and reporting on it. I would suggest that you're an advocacy organization as well, correct?
Absolutely. We are, and what we advocate are fair and responsible practices. And it's really important that we talk for a moment about the recent settlement between the United States Department of Justice and Wells Fargo, because for a long time, when we were advocating that these very abusive practices exist, many people were denying them. And what this settlement shows is that discrimination was relevant towards African Americans and Latinos, and that similarly situated borrowers were charged more for the same credit product. So you had African Americans and Latinos being charged twice as much to three times as much as likely for a loan as a similarly situated white borrower. This created a great economic drain in those communities.
How is it that, I mean, you know, with all due respect to lenders, how is it that they can, I mean, blatantly lie? Well, no, we didn't do that. Well, of course you did that. We've got millions of families, well, hundreds of thousands of families that we could bring to testify to what you did do. Listen, it's hard enough for white families to deal with these situations, to embarrass and to continue to embarrass families of color, to take away opportunity, to really steal what little they have and place that in jeopardy should be criminal and they should be held accountable.
You're absolutely right. Initially, what we saw was that these inflated housing prices were masking the problem. So a lot of people wasn't sure what's going on because a lot of these borrowers were subjected to repeated refinances. But once the inflation in housing started to decrease and we start returning back to normal housing prices, we started seeing how rampant these practices are. And what we're really pleased with is that as a result of these bad practices, the newly created Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was created. This is the only federal financial agency that has a sole design to ensure that these risky mortgages don't take place in the future. There are currently laws on the book as the result of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Consumer Protection Act that prohibits many of these practices, and the newly created Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is promulgating and creating rules right now to ensure these type of practices are not the practices in the mortgage market of tomorrow.
All right. We're going to, if you can stay with us a little bit longer, we need to take a quick break here in just a minute. But I do want to continue this discussion. I think it's important that people hear it. And we also have, Nikita, a very significant percentage of our listenership, come from minority communities, and I think it's important that they hear this. So stay with us. We're gonna take a quick break here and come back. If you'd like to join us, folks, if you have a question or comment for Nikita Bailey, we would love to hear from you. 888-552-3595. Nikita again is the executive vice president at the Center for Responsible Lending. You're going to find them online at responsiblelending.org. If Jeff hasn't already done it, it'll be on the Facebook page shortly. Stay with us. We'll come back right after this.
You're listening to a best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen. Be heard. Take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Unions work. Did you know that workers covered by a union contract earn more money each year than non-union workers? And that a contract can put more dollars in your pocket each and every week? A union contract protects your wages, giving your family financial security. Does more money in your pocket sound good? Find out how a union can work for you. Call the United Food and Commercial Workers at 1-888-485-9671. That's 1-888-485-9671.
You're listening to a best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Keitra Bailey is my guest. She is the Executive Vice President of the Center for Responsible Lending. Again, you're going to find them online at responsiblelending.org. Now, Keitra, you know, one of the questions, it's a common question, it's an important question, but it's a question that needs to be asked and answered. Is it possible for anyone in this country to be able to live the dream of home ownership?
It is. It is. And what we need to do is make sure that in the mortgage market, we go back to creating a level playing field. We know that currently a lot of borrowers are in mortgages where they're upside down, meaning that they owe more on the mortgage note than the home is actually worth. So what we need to do is make sure that foreclosure prevention efforts help mortgage borrowers refinance those mortgages so that they can take advantage of these historic lows in the mortgage market. And we also need to remember that this foreclosure crisis is not over. We're only halfway through. So there are many borrowers that still can be re- that can still be saved. And those borrowers need to receive mortgage loan modifications, meaning that principal on those mortgages needs to be lowered because those borrowers will be able to pay those mortgages with a lower principal. And that will give the kind of opportunity to many families that homeownership is supposed to provide instead of the burdens that they're experiencing today.
Well, Nikita, let's go back to foreclosures for just a moment, because there are way too many people within the sound of our voices right now, and I don't care what color you are, I don't care what product you have, I don't care what bank or mortgage company you belong to, I don't care if it's a government-backed loan or not. The bottom line is that there are lots of people in the legal community that understand the foreclosure laws a lot better than I ever will, that have really taken advantage of what's happened over the last handful of years and continue to encourage foreclosures because, frankly, lots of people financially benefit from that. So even those that easily qualify for a remodification are not getting those remodification loans because, frankly, those that are a lot smarter than I am, perhaps not smarter than you, but a whole lot smarter than me, know how to play this game better than I do.
And that's why we push so hard for servicing reform. And in states like California, homeowners were actually just given legislation that creates a homeowner's bill of rights in the foreclosure process. And it outlines some clear rules around how these loans need to be serviced, meaning that these borrowers should get opportunities for modifications as opposed to getting layered on fees and redirected from loan modification. What we are totally advocating for is that all eligible borrowers get those loan modifications, because housing is a critical part of our economic sector, and when those homeowners get into a more financial footing, our economy is going to recover a lot faster than it currently is.
Well, that really is the point. You know, we have actually on this show, I don't know how many of these we've covered, but more than our fair share of people, whether they be people of color or not, that have had all kinds of issues with their borrower. And, you know, we've chronicled people that can afford to be in their homes, that have done everything they could, that have sent thousands of dollars to their mortgage company, that jumped through every hoop that was asked of them, that sent the same documents over and over and over again, only to be denied a remodification or another loan. You know, at some point here, okay, so in California they've done this, but don't we need the federal government, don't we need Congress to step up and say, hey, maybe we can't agree on a lot, but the one thing we can agree on is that we've got to protect those that are being unfairly punished just for living, because that's what they're doing.
Right now, there are more opportunities to refinance. The Homeownership HARP Act has been strengthened, and it's created so that more homeowners get an opportunity to refinance. So there is activity happening that is permitting these refinances, and what we need are homeowners to stay very diligent and to keep pushing that envelope and not to give up when they hit a brick wall. We need them to consistently demand they are given the opportunities that they know exist for themselves.
So even
that's going to lift up our economic challenge.
So even if they've already been denied by their mortgage company, they should continue to push on?
Yes, because there is a new version of the HARP program, and it's been relaxed a little bit to make sure that borrowers who are underwater can tap into these historically low interest rates. So I would give it another try. I would not give up. I would contact that lender and see if I qualified under this new revised set of HARP.
All right, very good. Well, before we wrap things up today, Nikita, I think it's just important for people to understand that there is somewhere for them to turn to. If somebody were to contact the responsible, if somebody were to contact the Center for Responsible Lending, would you be able to help individuals, or is this more of a, you know, is what the work you're doing in a more of a wholesale thing?
It's more wholesale, we do more policy advocacy. I would recommend borrowers contact their lenders directly, or they seek out a HUD-certified housing counselor to receive assistance. These housing counselors provide their services, and they are certified to help homeowners get a better opportunity on the other side, and they are also a good safety net for being the first line who can look over borrower situations and provide them with the type of guidance that they need.
And I do believe that's free, is it not? That is a free service provided by the federal government, is it not?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And before we go, it's really important that we talk about what the mortgage market needs to look like in the future. We need to make sure we don't unduly restrict credit in the future so that qualified borrowers can become and maintain home ownership. The travesty of this crisis is that a lot of people were pushed out of home ownership who, prior to these risky practices, were very successful at being homeowners. They had already lived in their homes and had built up equity. So we need to make sure that when we create the mortgage market of tomorrow, that borrowers are not unduly pushed out from having access to credit, because that's going to be a critical portion of how we rebuild this economic engine around.
Yeah, you know, Nikitra, I think that bothers me more than anything, is that people fought for years. Minority communities fought for years to be able to get access to the same credit that others did just because of the color of their skin. They finally got it. And what did the industry do? They said, we don't care. We're going to take your money and we're going to run. And I'm so offended by that at every way you can be offended. We're going to keep an eye on this. And I would think, Nikitra, we're going to have you back at some time in the very near future.
I look forward to it. And thank you so much.
I appreciate your time this morning. Again, it's already up on the Facebook page, so go check out the great work that's being done there. All right.
You're listening to a best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
At last, we have a clear sign that Mitt Romney really is a man of the people. The proof of his populist pudding came on his recent political foray to jolly old England. While in London, the multimillionaire financier and presidential hopeful showed his common touch by chowing down with about 250 local folks on a humble meal of fish and chips, served up in paper cones. Wow, down home. Well, not exactly. Folks mischaracterizes Mitt's crowd, since the ticket price for the chow down was $25,000 to $75,000 per head for fish and chips. As one somewhat surprised attendee noted, it was the most expensive halibut in town. And the donors were not truly locals, but American financiers who were top executives working in the London financial district for the biggest Wall Street and British banks, hedge funds, and such private equity outfits as Romney's own money machine, Bain Capital. They were drawn to Mitt's political flame because, one, he hails from their self-centered and self-serving world, and two, he fully embraces their sad complaint that public criticism and the push for more regulation of elite bankers has gone too far. With tongue-clucking empathy, Romney assured these privileged ones that America's banking reforms were unnecessary and overly burdensome, and he would repeal them. However, the timing of his denunciation of U.S. policy was off, for British banks such as Barclays and HSBC are presently ensnared in public scandals involving massive consumer rip-offs and gross ethical violations. Still, in this ornate ballroom with millionaires munching the food of the commoners, any outrage from actual commoners was, as one muncher said dismissively, just background noise. This is Jim Hightower saying, yeah, power to the 1%.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Next time you need to stop for groceries, the 42,000 members of the United Food and Commercial Workers in Michigan ask you to shop at one of the stores where they work, including Kroger, Meijer, Hillers, and Hollywood Markets. Shopping at these union stores helps support good union jobs, which build healthy communities. If you already shop at these stores, our members want to thank you for your support.
Recently on First Shift.
As I'm sure many of you know, Mitt Romney was in London.
Do they look ready to your experienced eye? There are a few things that were disconcerting.
The Prime Minister shoots back.
We are holding an Olympic Games in one of the busiest, most active, bustling cities anywhere in the world. I mean, of course, it's easier if you hold an Olympic Games in the middle of nowhere.
Punch Mayor Boris Johnson.
There's a guy called Mitt Romney. He wants to know whether we're ready. Are we ready?
They are definitely ready.
Fox News' Charles Krauthammer.
What Romney answered in that question is unbelievable. It's beyond human understanding. It's incomprehensible. I'm out of adjectives.
The first of what promises to be a gap-filled trip.
He appears to forget the name of the Labour Party leader he is meeting with. The awkward boomeranging praise for the socialized health care service, almost starting a war with Iran, and saying Palestinians are poor because of their inferior culture.
First Chip with Tony Trujillo
on 1310 WDTW.
Show some respect. This is
This is D. Alexander Bullock. Join me and Tony Trupiano on August 25th at 12 noon for the Crusade for America Parent and Youth March. We march for an urban policy. We march for a war on poverty. We march to save democracy. We march to stop gun violence. Get active, get engaged, and get involved. For more information, like us on Facebook at Rainbow Push Detroit and follow us on Twitter at Rainbow Push MI.
You're listening to a best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Indeed.
If you have been looking for real journalism as First Shift has,
then it will come as no surprise
that when we discovered Susan Dimas, First Shift made an extraordinary effort to make her one of our regular guests.
And as you will hear in a moment,
the main thing Susan cares about is truth and fortifying her profession as a journalist.
And toward that end,
First Shift hit the jackpot
as we welcome MERS and MLive journalist Susan Dimas.
And we do welcome back to the show Susan Dimas, and we look forward to this segment every single week. And Susan, so I don't forget, because I've been really bad at this, we're on vacation next week, so you get next week off from the show, and I wanted to make sure I told you that up front so I didn't forget.
Okay.
I'm going fishing. I'm not going to Hawaii, but I'm going fishing.
Nice. That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I understand you've been at the National Conference of State Legislatures. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm in Chicago right now as we speak.
And how is that going?
You know, it's been very interesting. It's always great to see what other states are doing. But, you know, yesterday I kind of stumbled on some news when the heads of both the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association were here speaking about education reform. And Randy Weingarten, the AST head, called for a merger with the NEA. So that could be a very exciting prospect.
Well, you know, exchanged emails with you yesterday. As you know, David Hecker's on with us in about 25 minutes, and I certainly plan to ask him about that. How did this come up in conversation? This is not something you just casually go, oh, by the way, we should probably do a merger between our two massive unions.
Right. Well, there was a lawmaker from Louisiana who said, you know, times are really tough. Do we really need two sets of lobbyists and sets of staff out there? Shouldn't we all come together and be working for the same thing? And, you know, Randy Weingarten was all on board. Dennis Van Roekel from the NEA was a little more hesitant and said, you know, there's a history there. We tried this in 1998. It didn't go. But, you know, we'll work on things that we agree on and go from there.
Well, in that history, if I understand correctly, was the AFT voted for the merger and the NEA, which is the National Education Association, did not vote for the merger. Is that the way I understand it?
That's correct.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting. And folks, don't start calling us now. We're not advocating for it. We're not for it. We're not against it. We just got the information yesterday. We'll see what David Hecker has to say, and I'm going to guess what David Hecker has to say is probably not a whole lot, because this is something that comes from the top down, and Randy Weingarten is definitely the top. You know, we just had the show, as I'm sure you're aware, Susan, the American Federation of Teachers just had their national conference at Cobo Hall, and we did the show there for 2 days and really enjoyed that. But that would be major news. You get two significant unions like that coming together in a merger, and whether it was just convenient conversation or anything more than that, that would be big news.
It would be. And, you know, I think that both of the union heads have definitely been following what's been going on in Michigan. Randy was very well versed in everything from vagina gate to the emergency manager issue. So, you know, certainly I'm sure Michigan would be a factor in all this discussion as well to see how the affiliates would vote.
You know, let's we're going to talk about some election stuff. But before we do that, as you know, the State Board of Canvassers yesterday agreed, not that they had a choice, the Supreme Court basically forced their hand, agreed to place the Public Act 4 question on the ballot this November. There are other fights coming. One of them would be the constitutional amendment for Protect Our Jobs. But we'll save that for another time, Susan Demas. But with the idea of Public Act 4 going on the ballot, there's now going to be a battle, as you know, for emergency managers, now once again emergency financial managers. And it does matter. One of them is actually not qualified to be an emergency financial manager. This does change the dynamic of that role considerably, unless, of course, you go with Attorney General Bill Schuette, who not everybody is agreeing with.
Right. I mean, you know, now we've reverted back to the old law that was on the books since 1972, the ESM law. And, you know, it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out. You know, you've got a lot of money that the unions have spent just trying to get this measure on the ballot, much less, you know, wage a campaign, you know, to get people on board. So it'll be interesting to see how much money they're going to have to spend on that effort and who's going to line up against it.
It will be very, you're right, the money part of this is huge. AFSCME to this point has really almost solely funded the Public Act 4 fight. When we saw the filings, in fact, it was I got my information from MERS. So when I looked at that, 95% of the funding for Public Act 4 fight has come from AFSCME. You know, will the other unions step up, knowing that they've got this constitutional amendment fight in their hands? And we're going to have six, maybe seven proposals to deal with come November 6th, Susan Demas. And you have to wonder, even as a journalist, when you start to write about this stuff, there's certainly a public service to education. But what is your responsibility as a journalist? Where does it begin and where does it end? And I don't think I have the answer to that. I'm not so sure anybody does.
Yeah, I mean, certainly education is in my opinion, that's my top obligation as a journalist. But you're right. I mean, there are a lot of valid initiatives. They're very complicated. And there's a lot to talk about. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of voters have no idea what they're going to be facing as they go down the ballot because, you know, they're focused on the Obama-Romney race, maybe the U.S. Senate. And, you know, then when you flip over your ballot and you see these gigantic questions, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be very confused.
No question. Then, we're going to talk about some of these. We're going to talk about the Senate race, certainly. We're going to talk about some of the congressional races statewide. Then we've got the Supreme Court races. Now we've got the ballot issues. I'm advocating for everybody, and pretty much every major print publication in the state puts out a voter's guide. Rip that out of the paper. Make notes on it. Circle the people you want to vote for. Do your homework and bring that with you to your voting place. I'm going to start really preaching that because you can absolutely do that. There's nothing illegal about doing that at all. I call it a cheat sheet because it is a cheat sheet.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you have this many questions on the ballot, you know, like you often do in a presidential year, you know, I mean, it's hard for a lot of people to keep everything straight.
All right, well, let's go back to the NCSL Summit, the National Conference of State Legislatures Summit. You had sent me a note that said that there was an economist there, a national economist, that had some bad news, with regard to downgrading the rating that the state has or the country?
The national credit rating.
Ugh.
You know, like what we saw from Standard & Poor's last year over the debt ceiling fight. The keynote speaker on Tuesday was actually Diane Swonk. She's an economist that's very nationally known. Has a very fascinating history. Was actually in the World Trade Center on 9/11. And, you know, her feeling is because of the brinksmanship in Washington and the prospects of getting something done in terms of the debt and reforming taxes and spending, that we're going to be in for a wholesale downgrade, not just from Standard & Poor's. And it's going to be hard to avoid that if you've got folks that just don't want to compromise.
Well, you know, there's that is a serious problem. We've had this conversation on this program. I've had this conversation via email, on the telephone with people. Imagine where we would be if the legislators would just agree to work together a little bit. I was at a conference up in northern Michigan on Monday and Tuesday, Susan Demas, and there was a speaker there from Washington, D.C. that they have this amazing graphic that showed the amount of legislation not even allowed to be introduced. And it was like 500 in the last quarter, 583 pieces of legislation that the Republicans wouldn't even allow to be introduced in the House. You've got to imagine that not every one of those 583 pieces were partisan. So this is just ridiculous.
Right. You know, I mean, I think everybody can agree that we don't like paying more in taxes, you know, and that's Democrats and Republicans, independents alike. But, you know, taxes are at an all-time low, let's face it. And our debt has increased. We have spending priorities that we're not getting to. And, you know, the issue of taxes is totally off the table when you're talking about these reform efforts. And that's a huge part of the equation. You can't just be against everything. You have to be looking at solutions. But right now, you got a huge contingent of people that want to say no to just about everything.
Well, in the sad reality, and this is my opinion, would love your opinion, Susan Demas, are we already lame duck for the rest of the year?
I don't think we are going to see very much at the national level, certainly, and not on, you know, the huge issue with spending and taxes. I think they'll punt to 2013. At the state level, you know, you've got Republican majorities and Republican governors, so I think you're going to see efforts on, you know, cutting teacher retirement benefits. I think you're going to see cutting business taxes with the personal property tax. I think you might see some movement on those controversial abortion bills, but I think there will be less activity than there's been in the past.
All right, we've got to take a quick break. Susan Demas live with us in Chicago this morning. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the election on Tuesday, get some thoughts from Susan Demas on that. But we're up against the break. We'll be back right after we take this.
You're listening to a best of First Shift with Tony Truppiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace.
The Teamsters Union is fighting for higher wages, better health care, safer roads and workplaces, a secure retirement for every working American. We're fighting for laws that level the playing field for working families.
The Teamsters Union is fighting to keep good jobs in America and to rebuild our economy.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to Wall Street elitists and vulture capitalists.
The Teamsters Union is standing up to politicians who want to take away the rights workers fought for over the past 100 years.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at Teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Today in the United States, labor is under siege. Unions are being assailed. In states like Wisconsin and Ohio, collective bargaining rights are being stripped away, and so-called right-to-work laws aim to eliminate unions entirely so companies can pay less or outsource jobs completely. As a result, you're being divided, and there's no one place for you to be heard, no one place to speak, no one place to stand together until now. Welcome to UnionCircle.com, an online community created specifically for union members. A place where 40 million active and retired union members, their friends, family, and supporters all across North America can be counted. UnionCircle.com provides a forum for members to interact and build a powerful voice. Union members can share their thoughts and opinions. Union locals can post news and announcements. People who run for public office and who stand with the unions can spread their message and rally union members. Because united we stand, united we vote. You'll also find union-friendly businesses that offer Circle members exclusive discounts, promotions, special offers, rewards, and coupons, all to help support America's workforce. And all UnionCircle.com members can create a call to action to make a real difference in their city, their jobs, and their lives. UnionCircle.com is the online community for anyone who believes in restoring the middle class and that the strength of this nation is in its workers. It's a website just for you. Will UnionCircle.com replace Facebook? Not at all. As a matter of fact, it's tightly integrated with both Facebook and Twitter. But while Facebook and Twitter connect you to family and friends and LinkedIn to professional contacts, UnionCircle.com is specifically designed to connect you with your fellow union members and to keep you plugged into union activity locally and nationally. It is the perfect site for all union members because America's unions have always known that there is power in numbers and strength in unity. Listen. Be heard. Take action. Now is the time. UnionCircle.com is the place. Get in the circle. UnionCircle.com.
Over 140 Rite Aid stores are unionized with over 1,500 United Food and Commercial Workers members working with a union contract in stores all across Michigan. Because they are union members, they have access to higher wages, a company pension, a health care plan for themselves and their family, and UFCW Rite Aid workers proudly serve their communities and at the same time enjoy a living wage and benefit package. Please support our union Rite Aid workers and make sure they know how much we appreciate the work they are doing. To join the UFCW family of drugstores, visit ufcw.org or call 248-585-9671.
You're listening to a best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano right here on 1310 WDTW.
And appreciate everybody being with us this morning. My guest, Susan Demas, she's a journalist with Mirrors News Service, Statewide News Service, and MLive.com, amongst other media outlets. Susan is in Chicago at the National Conference of State Legislatures. We are going to turn our attention to some, certainly some legislative news. We had elections, primary elections on Tuesday, some interesting results. As you're aware, Susan, one of the things that will be announced today, before we get into some of these specific races, is the Thaddeus McCotter investigation has been completed, and I got some information that I can't confirm, and so I mentioned it earlier that this might actually be the undoing of Kerry Bentivoglio, that he may have had something to do with paying off some gambling debts of a McCotter staffer. Again, I've not been able to confirm that, but we'll know at 11 o'clock this morning what's going on. That, of course, the timing is odd because I would think the attorney general would have known that before the primary. Maybe the timing's not odd. Maybe it's just strategic.
I think that's a key question. When was this investigation done? Because it started 3 months ago. And, I think it would be, a pertinent question to the attorney general is when did he have the investigation completed? And was the election a factor in the timing of the release of the report?
Fair enough. Well, let's go in. And instead of, I'm not just going to start throwing out a bunch of races. Why don't I let you kind of talk about a few of the races that were on your radar screen?
In Detroit, I thought the most interesting race was in the 6th House District between Representatives Maureen Stapleton and Rashida Tlaib. You know, on paper, this looked like it was Stapleton's race to lose because it had more of her district. But Tlaib raised a lot of money. She's very good at the ground game and knocking doors. The interesting part was how the outside groups decided to play in this one little house race. You had Students First, which is Michelle Rhee's education choice group, decided to do a $40,000 independent expenditure for Stapleton. And you had unions decide to really put in with Tlaib, and, you know, even one of them yanked their endorsement from Stapleton. So, you know, it's always interesting to me when outside groups decide that they want to get really involved in these small little state house races.
Well, just when you think it doesn't matter, it does. I often say endorsements don't win elections, but in the case of the UAW pulling their joint endorsement, which is what it was, they basically said we could live with either candidate. When they pulled their endorsement of Maureen Stapleton on Friday, and they did this on Friday, Susan Demas, that changed a lot of people's opinions. I got a ton of feedback on that.
Right, right. And you know, Rashida Tlaib, you know, obviously, you know, was running a campaign before, as was Maureen Stapleton. But, you know, especially in these races, you know, that often are not at the top of people's minds, you know, I think if you do have a presence from outside groups, they start with an ad campaign or with knocking doors. You know, I think that it definitely does get through to people.
Well, we had Rashida Tlaib on, Representative Rashida Tlaib on the show on Friday, and she actually got quite emotional talking about the assault on her because that $40,000 injection of cash was not something she could respond to. That's not something as a candidate, and I've been a candidate, Susan, you can't just, you know, especially 3 or 4 days before an election, start calling up people and saying, I need $40,000 tomorrow, because it just doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. Now, she had a considerable advantage, I think about $50,000 over Stapleton herself, but, you know, obviously when you have a group that comes in with a concerted effort, it's going to make a difference.
Well, and, you know, interesting.
You know, one question that, you know, was never answered to me from the Students First folks is why this race of all others? I mean, they endorsed about a dozen candidates, but they only put money into this race. So that's a question I never got an answer to.
Well, I'll take a guess at it. As you know, Representative Stapleton did vote against teacher tenure, and that would be a Students First issue. And so perhaps they saw her as a better bet because Students First is it's a union busting group. That's part of their agenda, is to bust up the unions. They are, of course, very pro-charter, as you know, Susan. Maureen is going to be, at least in their opinion, I think, is more non-public schools. Interestingly, both the Students First and the Great Lakes Education Project, which is funded by Dick DeVos, put money into the new 11th House race between David Kinesic and Cody Bailey. They spent $40,000 on the Cody Bailey campaign. He got trounced in the 11th House District. I mean, that one wasn't even close. So there's another one where money didn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I should say out of fairness, I mean, Students First, they're very adamant that they're not anti-union, you know, despite the criticism. So, you know, they claim to just be reform-minded. But the Great Lakes Education Project has played in some races. And, you know, it's interesting that their mailers weren't necessarily on education issues either.
No, they were not necessarily just on education issues. Well, I think it was fascinating that wherever they put their money in, those races didn't go the way they were betting they would go. And we're going to actually talk with David Hecker about that at great length in the next hour. Any other, let's talk a little bit about Nancy Cassese in the 11th Congressional District. Her writing campaign, obviously not successful, not a surprise. What was for me a little bit of a surprise, Susan Demas, was how badly she fared.
Well, writing campaigns are always a really big challenge. And, you know, despite the fact that she had some money to put into the race, she had some name ID. I mean, her name isn't on the ballot. And, you know, you've got a Republican who is, and he had some money behind him. He had that very interesting super PAC that made the New York Times. So I wasn't surprised by it. I wasn't really even surprised by the margin. But, you know, of course, we have another special election to contend with in the 11th because Nakata resigned. So, you know, maybe Nancy will get another bite at the apple and she can be a congresswoman for about, you know, 7 weeks.
Well, she promised that if she didn't win the primary, she would drop out of the special. I think that there are some groups that are going to try to hold her to that, needless to say.
We'll see how that turns out. That could be an interesting one.
Yeah, that could be a really interesting one. Well, last but not least, of course, Debbie Stabenow now has one candidate to worry about, and that is Pete Hoekstra. We've only got about 30 seconds left. Not a surprise there for any of us, really, is it, Susan?
No, Clark Durant just didn't get the support and the money early enough to mount a strong challenge. So it should be an interesting race. I don't think it's a top 10 race, though, across the country between Debbie and Pete.
No, not at this point. Thanks so much. Have a safe trip back. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay, thanks, Tony.
Susan Demas with Mirrors and MLive.com. We'll take a quick break. David Hecker in studio with us when we continue.
That will wrap it up for now on the Best of First Shift with Tony Trupiano. Remember, we're always interacting on Facebook on the First Shift with Tony Trupiano page. Add a like, tell a friend, grow the community today. Also on Twitter at Tony Trupiano, TonyTrupiano. And, of course, email if you still use it. No, I'm just kidding. Everyone still uses email. Tony@thetonyshow.org. Thanks to everyone who appreciates and supports the show. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Jeff Radford, and I hope you enjoyed this hour of the show. Now, stay tuned for the latest news brought to you by NBC News.
I started using drugs when I was 13 years old. I started with pot, like most people probably do, alcohol, cigarettes, and eventually moved up to methamphetamine and went on to cocaine and eventually ended up on heroin.
I did not have a life. I mean, I owned a multi-million-dollar advertising firm and I couldn't function. My husband packed the children and left. I had no idea where they were, but none of that mattered. All that mattered was smoking crack.
My parents, brother, and sisters are just baffled. You know, how can somebody that supposedly has so much be so miserable and keep throwing his life away?
And I remember my mother saying to me one day, "You're going to die if you don't get help." I wanted to have my life back and my family back. And that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
This traffic update is brought to you by T-Mobile.
Checking your rush hour commute, we still have that problem on 96 eastbound at Milford Road. Accident has your right shoulder blocked. We also got heavy traffic on M14 westbound between Beck Road and Ford Road. And still got that overturned truck on 11 Mile Road eastbound at Ryan, but the police are on the scene. And 275 northbound at Ecorse Road, accident has the right shoulder blocked. That's involving that semi. That's your total traffic update. I'm Chris Boyd.
Check out the latest traffic updates with the all-new Samsung 4G device available from T-Mobile. The buy one, get one Samsung 4G device sale is going on now for a limited time only. New 2-year agreement and mail-in rebate card required.